mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and theantimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back. Thankful to be alive as always. You know, unfortunately, the same can't be said for some really brilliant people that were lost today. It's not making huge news and stuff in the mainstream or anything like that, but we just found out that we lost one of our team members here at the Anti-Media, Josh Paniagua, one of our very, very young writers out of Sacramento, California. The guy was only like 21, 22 years old. He was struggling with epilepsy, and he had seizures on a regular basis. It just happened. I don't know what happened, how it happened or whatever, but the fact of the matter is that we lost one of our awesome writers. We just published an article from him yesterday. Just yesterday we published an article from him, and today I just look at my phone, I get a phone call from our editor, and it's like, dude, one of our guys is dead. And so it's really hard to deal with losing somebody, especially when they're that young. I mean, if it's a guy, you know, 70 years old, done a bunch of things, and fine, you die and still sucks, but you know, at least you lived out your life. The guy was only like 21. And it's just really, really sad. But he had a really bright future. He was a musician, writer, really, really smart person. And so, you know, hopefully his family is okay and are going to be able to deal with, you know, all the stuff going on. Also, William Grigg, who is a very low-key libertarian thinker. This guy was a writer that wrote a lot about the police and police brutality, the police state and stuff. He is dead today as well. He was struggling with some illnesses. He was in and out of the hospital. You know, this guy was a little older. He was probably like in his 50s or 60s or so, but still not good. And also Charlie Murphy. Don't want to forget about that. The guy was funny. He was hilarious on the Chappelle Show. He's dead too. I mean, these aren't the kind of people who are going to be big time mainstream media. Like, oh my God, this person died and we're all going to grieve and blah, blah, blah. These aren't the kind of people that are like that. But regardless, these are the people that for us matter. I mean, these are thinkers, writers, entertainers. And they're no longer with us, and it sucks. But that being said, We got a job to do tonight, and that is to break down some of this propaganda bullshit going on in the media and the politicians, the foreign policy, and there's a lot of it. I mean, the damn guy on United Airlines, let's get the superficial shit out of the way right away. The damn guy on United Airlines got his ass kicked by the, you know, whoever that was, some law enforcement agency, went on there at the direction of United Airlines. They brutalized some doctor, and then the media that comes out tried to smear the guy. I don't know if you guys saw this, but on TMZ ran a story about, oh, this doctor, you know, paid for sex or was trading drugs for sex or some shit. Like, they're trying to smear the guy. It's like, who gives a shit about his past behavior? Like, we just saw the video of him getting beat up by the damn United Airline hired goons. And, you know, the taxpayer probably paid for that beating, too, you know, because that was some kind of cop or TSA or something. It wasn't an airline employee. You know, and so that's going on. You got, you know, Sean Spicer yesterday, several things on Sean Spicer. And this is something that I covered. But first, let's look at what the idiot said. He's talking about how not even the Nazis used, not even Hitler used chemical weapons against his own people during World War II. I mean, are we saying that the Jews were not German people, or is that what Spicer is saying? I mean, so, I mean, these people, especially some of these idiots in the Trump administration, are just making themselves look so stupid. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And something I wrote about today, and this is a little more interesting, I think, as far as like Freudian slips or whatever you want to call them. Let me see if I can pull up the audio, because this to me is pretty telling. And so Spicer has now several times, has now said that Trump is trying to destabilize Syria and the Middle East. And so, you know, I'm trying to figure out, is this guy like doing Freudian slips? Is he like trying to say this? I mean, at this point, he's repeating it and nobody is correcting him, and they haven't come out and said, hey, we're clarifying something. We didn't mean to say this. So, like, here's what he's saying. You pull up the audio here.
And I came out to make sure that we stay focused on what the president's doing and his decisive action. I needed to make sure that I clarified and not was in any way, shape, or form any more of a distraction from the president's decisive action in Syria and the attempts that he's making to destabilize the region and root out ISIS out of Syria. So,
you guys caught that, right?
Hey, would you expect anything less, dude?
Seriously, right? All right, so joining us on the call tonight is our awesome longtime co-host and awesome co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. Just, you know, all this stuff going on right now, honestly, every little thing we're seeing in the news is just a circus and a distraction. There's two super important events that are taking place that are under the radar. And, you know, unconfirmed, of course, because we don't have satellites, but apparently Pyongyang was emptied and China moved. That 150,000 troop number was too small, Nick. I think it was something like twice that was moved to the North Korean border. And what's the really messed up thing I was researching was that North Korea, Pyongyang's like 4 million people roughly, but there's only like maybe 10 to 20,000 in the Politburo and the apparatus that runs things. Well, those guys went and hid in their dumps, and they told everyone else to go out into the countryside and find what food they could.
Man, that's nuts. Yeah, this stuff is accelerating real quickly when it comes to North Korea.
Yeah, there's going to be a refugee crisis that makes the European thing look like nothing on China's border.
Yeah, and so China has already moved a bunch of troops over to that area to contain any fallout that goes on there. And so it appears like China in some ways it is like trying to say, okay, you know, we'll work with the U.S. and we're gonna, you know, we're gonna demilitarize North Korea. Again, and I've mentioned this and I've made this point in my writing and on the radio show several times now, is that North Korea, as much as they say a bunch of crazy shit and they, you know, their leader is whatever he is, you know, the Kim Jong bloodline, they're not outwardly violent. Like, they haven't invaded another country. They haven't bombed another country. They haven't done anything to another country ever. Like, they've only existed, you know, after World War II. North and South Korea were split apart. So North Korea has only been a country after World War II. And it, meanwhile, the only thing that it's done is defending itself from the U.S. invading Korea.
Meanwhile, we dropped two nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and, you know, we use nuclear weapons. We used chemical weapons in Vietnam. Shit, we're using chemical weapons on our own people in Standing Rock. We use our chemical weapons on people at Ferguson. I mean, we're talking about tear gas, but that's a chemical weapon.
And don't think they don't have biologicals cooked up. They tried out that in World War One. It just got too out of control, and that was what was called the Spanish flu.
Biological.
I mean, you can research it yourself and find out that the spread's been tracked, and it came over with our doughboys. So it was like our army guys were infected with it on purpose. This is another Tuskegee bullshit.
Crazy. I had never even heard about that. So another rabbit hole to go down to look at some of this foreign policy stuff.
He is the lord of rabbit holes.
I know.
Dude, because it all leads back to the same crap, which is there's people that are on the top with so much goddamn wealth, dude, that they are gods, and they're so bored with their lives. The only thing they have left is just being evil, sick fucks.
Good point.
Seriously, name me somebody with $1 billion who has a shred of normalcy in them. Anyone. Name one.
Richard Branson seems like an
Hell no, dude. That guy's the weirdest dude there is.
He's the one.
I mean, look at Mark Cuban. Look at anybody with $1 billion. I don't care what industry they made it in. They are a weird sicko.
I'm not saying I want to settle down and have kids with him. I'm just saying he doesn't seem like a...
He just took a long vacation with Obama on a private island, dude. I mean, the guy's a weirdo.
Yeah.
Strange. Very strange guy. But... maybe he's less evil than your average ultra-rich.
Just the fact he's hoarding wealth all alone right there and doing nothing with it. I mean,
well, I agree with you there. I mean, I think having wealth and not divesting it or investing it in some way is a form of sickness.
Like, Musk is the only appreciable robber baron in my eyes because he's at least pimping sustainable technology that will improve our lives. But the rest of these guys can go to hell.
Well, Musk also has an eye on the future. I mean, he legitimately wants to push the human race forward. I mean, I, for you know, regardless of what you think about technology, I mean, he's trying to get our asses to Mars. He's trying to be sustainable. Musk is, I think Musk is one of the good guys. But, you know, I kind of agree with you. It's hard to imagine a billionaire who is not, I mean, it, that kind of wealth and power and privilege warps your sense of reality so profoundly.
You know who's a normal billionaire is J.K. Rowling. Am I getting her name right? J.K. Made Harry Potter. Anyway, she was a billionaire and now she's worth like $800 million because she's donated $200 million. And you know why? Because she doesn't know what to do with it. And she even said, "I have so much money, I can't do anything with it. All I keep doing is opening nonprofits." So that's what they need to be forced to do. But that's the thing, is that the 99% of these people are just sick in the head, dude. They have a problem, and that's why they're so quote-unquote successful.
Fair point, man. Fair point. I think it is kind of a – there's something got to be wrong with you, right? If you're like trying to hoard that much money – knowing the horrible things going on with people and the horrible, you know, the fact that people are like starving in the streets, man. Like, you guys ever go to these big cities? Like, I mean, I see it here in San Diego too, but San Diego's not what you would call like a really big city. But like, you go to LA or something, you go down to like downtown, And you see like millionaires right there on the street. You see actors right there, and there's like a set up, and they're like filming a movie, and like they're literally stepping over homeless people, like to get into their Ferraris and shit. Like I'm not even like exaggerating here. Like it really takes a certain type of person to be able to become a billionaire in this world where there's hundreds of millions of people starving. Right now.
And remember, the vast majority of them have inherited it, which is even so much worse.
A lot of these people have just inherited money, and
they've never gone to a grocery store. They've never pumped gas. They've never done taxes. There's never been a door that wasn't open wide and bent over for them.
Yeah, dude. And Trump is definitely kind of on that in that boat too. In many ways. I mean, he talked about getting a small loan from his dad. What was it? Like 10 million? Five,
he got a million. Yeah, he got a million, which is like close to 20 in today's money.
Including inflation, he got like a small loan of $20 million. When you start talking about big money like that as like small, you know, you know that you're coming from a whole different class of people. We're trying to get Danny Quest on the line. To join us to talk about the Free Your Mind conference that just passed. We should all try to get up to that thing next year. Jake and DB, we should all try to go. And, you know, it is a really cool place to meet like-minded people. I'm sure several of the listeners out there tonight went to the Free Your Mind conference. We're trying to get Danny on the line to talk with us, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I keep seeing the call come through. I joined his call for a second.
That's where you went.
You need the host needs Adam, I think, but we'll get him on.
Okay, I think we got him now. Hey, Danny, are you there? What's up, man?
Yeah, I'm here, guys.
Welcome to the show, Danny Quest, journalist and just kind of all around badass when it comes to independent media. You recently got a job with the Fifth Column, I believe.
Yep.
How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing just great, man. Good to be with you guys. How you doing, DB? How's it going, Nick?
I'll speak to DB and tell you that we're doing pretty well. Unfortunately, we lost a team member earlier today. One of our writers passed away. Young guy, 21 years old. But, you know, we're dealing with that. We're going to probably have a statement out tomorrow about that. But, you know, besides that, personally, I mean, I'm doing really well. It's crazy to say it, but in these really crazy, scrambled, you know, insane times, you know, it makes our job slightly easier in a way because there's just so much for us to talk about, so much for us to cover. And Danny, we met down in Houston at the For the Community down with Derek Bros, and you know, me and you were talking. You're one of the guys that I know outside of like the group here on the radio that can basically talk about anything. You have a very large depth of knowledge. So before we go into the Free Your Mind conference, I just want to do a quick news roundup and get your take on some of the stuff going on right now.
Sure.
I'm just going to be pulling some stories off of the antimedia.org, the homepage of independent media. We've got dozens and dozens of news stories that went up today, both from our own writers and from all kinds of different websites. In fact, Danny, we've been featuring all of your articles from the Fifth Column on the homepage. Awesome. So let's talk. We briefly were talking a little bit about North Korea. And so there's a flurry of news going on. The latest that I saw reported from Voice of America, which keep in mind is a U.S.-funded propaganda outlet, is that North Korea is getting ready to do a nuclear test, underground nuclear test. Donald Trump has moved a, quote, armada over towards North Korea. North Korea has said that it would respond to any airstrikes or anything with a nuclear retaliation against South Korea. And China has moved 150,000 troops to the border. So, I mean, obviously there's a tinder box ready to get lit over in North Korea right now. So, Danny, I mean, what's your take on what's going on in that region right now?
It's very complicated geopolitically, but ultimately I think it will amount to a war theater. I don't see North Korea really putting its hands into anything right now, and I really don't. I was looking earlier for a definition of this armada, and it's just like we got boats in the Asian Peninsula, and I'm like, we always have boats in the Asian Peninsula. So besides for the China's positioning troops, which could say a lot of things, you know, the word on the street that I've seen in my research today is that China, part of what was going on with Donald Trump and the China conversation was basically the announcement that they're going to go ahead with all the World War III plans and the consolidation of the New World Order by essentially balkanizing every single opposition state. You know, there was the Wesley Clark, you know, seven states, and everybody knows there's Iran, and they went for Venezuela, and North Korea is this little tiny half an island of resistors, essentially, these quiet farming resistors. And I think countries like North Korea, we use Vietnam, for example. Vietnam was a very, very small, isolated, non-intravenous state that didn't agree with the American Empire. So we went in there and said, oh, we're just going to beat them up and bully them and, you know, disenfranchise their society, which we did very violently, very forcefully. The same thing is potentially happening today in North Korea, provided they provide some sort of pretext, like a false flag, or amp up the rhetoric more than just we're going to nuke you, because they've been saying North Korea is going to nuke us since like 1970 or something. It's been a long time. And that's not going to work to get us to go into another war, especially when Donald Trump's losing his base. Much of America is disenfranchised with war, regardless of what these baby boomer polls say. I don't watch the media. I follow you guys. You know what I'm saying? You are my media, the alternative media coalition. So I've been watching close with everything that's happening. And it's just obvious it all dates back to the Ezra Israel and, you know, the New World Order plans. There's several nation states that are opposed to a monolithic government, and they have to do literally everything that they can to destabilize these places. One of my favorite articles that you wrote, I believe today, was on the Spicer Freudian slips. Like, that doesn't just happen. There's a legitimate plan to destabilize Syria. There was a legitimate plan to destabilize Libya.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I wrote that today just because I'm so tired of all of this propaganda going on. And so one thing that you kind of mentioned here, and I want to get your thoughts on, is that, you know, there really are two belligerent states right now, according to U.S. political establishment, according to the U.S. mainstream media. There's two super belligerents, and these have been ongoing things. Iran and North Korea, and of course China, Russia is to be contained, and China is to be contained, but the two hot points are Iran and North Korea. And so we see similar talking points coming out from the media and from the political establishment, that these countries are aggressive, they're violent, and that they're both pursuing technology that could be used to basically destroy America. That is like the talking point, right? So I was just, you know, having this conversation with some friends yesterday about the realistic players here, because I look at North Korea, and as I was saying earlier, can anybody tell me the last country North Korea invaded? Can anybody tell me the last time North Korea shot a missile that blew up another country or landed on another country? Can anybody tell me the last time Iran invaded another country? Can anybody tell me the last time Iran shot missiles against another country offensively? So, you know, we're going around and we're saying, look, North Korea can't be allowed to pursue technologies like missiles or like nuclear capabilities, because they're so dangerous. But the reality of the situation here is that these countries aren't dangerous. At least, no. According to history, they're not dangerous because they've never actually used their weapons, right? And so, Danny, why do you think that people, like I've seen people in my own newsfeed saying, oh my God, North Korea is going to test a nuclear weapon. I can't believe that we're allowing them to do this. Like, Why do you think that people are buying into this crap?
Oh, that answer is easy, my friend. That's called complex MK Ultra propaganda media. It's our media companies are owned by six or seven families. They all have a common political interest, and they've been essentially brainwashing the fuck out of people for 60 years. If you want to not be afraid of Iran, if you want to not be afraid of North Korea, if you want to not be afraid of ISIS, turn your TV off. You will never hear about any of them. When does any of those three names come up in your daily life? They don't. The only time they do is when you sit in front of CNN or Fox or MSNBC or any of these other Breitbart, you know. They're propaganda firms. They capitalize on fear. They're there to peddle fear for the military-industrial complex. And once you understand that, you no longer fear. I mean, even mediocre states like North Korea, like that's really a threat to America. And I think a lot of times what I was saying earlier is it's war positioning. And it happened a lot in the Roman days and in the medieval times, you know, our perception of these big giant battles of these thousands of people that fought each other, that's really not what it was. It was very complex, small skirmishes that really established the borders, right? And that's kind of what it will be. There's no reason for Donald Trump and the, you know, Pentagon military apparatus to send in a full-fledged armada of SEAL Team 6 to assassinate Kim Jong-un when they can just, like, fly in a black helicopter and shoot him with a fucking sniper rifle from 20 miles away. Like, if they really wanted to take him out, they could. Everything else is just fucking propaganda for the plebeians, man. They're taking over the world, and they're just feeding us a bunch of bullshit to justify. I'm not afraid of Kim Jong-un. In fact, I like Kim Jong-un. Much as I've known about the dude, he's never did anything to piss me off. I like him more than I like Donald Trump. Fucking more buffoon.
Way better than Donald Trump, too.
Dude, put them both in a cage. I bet Kim Jong-un would give him the fucking work.
Oh, man, that's a good one, dude. You know, going back to my article that you mentioned, and, you know, I kind of just let loose on this with an opinion piece because at this point, the room for being a quote-unquote objective when it comes to this foreign policy stuff, there's no more room to be objective on this stuff. And I'm not afraid to say that I'm extremely biased and that I'm against the wars and that I don't want the United States to go cause destruction or destabilize governments like now they're actually saying that they're going to do. And so in this article, you know, I make the point here about going back to shifting the topic over to Syria and how the U.S. went and bombed Syria because Donald Trump, quote unquote, was thinking with his heart, according to the New York Times, because he was so moved by the fact that this damn Assad is bombing people with chemical weapons, killed 70 people. Trump was apparently so moved by that he decided, oh, well, I got to go kill people too. I got to drop bombs and I got to spend, you know, what was it, $60, $80 million in bombs that we got to send over there. According to reports, there was at least seven civilians killed in Donald Trump's own airstrikes that were in retaliation for this guy killing civilians. But, like, what I don't understand, and this is where I get really pissed off, how can people believe this shit when just last month the U.S.-led anti-ISIS coalition in Iraq and Syria killed 1,000 innocent people combined in Iraq and Syria, the U.S.-led coalition, many of which came in Mosul, where we've laid siege to one of Iraq's biggest cities. We've laid siege to the place, we've surrounded it, and now we're just dropping bombs into it, and a bunch of civilians are dying. And so Donald Trump goes on TV and says, well, I've been so moved by this, and I can't believe this guy was killing beautiful, beautiful babies. Don't get me wrong. It's horrible. The videos I saw were really compelling, and they're really heartbreaking. And you can't sit there and watch children choking to death and think, well, you know, don't think nothing of it. Yeah, it makes an emotional appeal. But in the same way, we should not be ignoring the fact that our own money is financing the mass slaughter of 1,000 civilians in the same region and then act like we're the good guys going over there and protecting these people from their own government. It's truly unbelievable.
It's asinine. It's Orwellian. we've reached Orwellian levels of warfare where the modern populace is programmed to respond to stimuli, and it's just manufactured perpetual war. The media manufactures conflicts to sell weapons to, you know, it's an extortion of the American people into the hands of privately ran military industrial complexes, whether it's the high C-up members of the Pentagon who are trading Afghanistan poppy, or members of the Raytheon group whose stock just went up about as much as fucking Delta's crashed. But the market will speak for itself. I refuse to pay taxes. I went viral yesterday. I would highly recommend checking it out on my Truther page. I went viral with Tulsi Gabbard's last three speeches in front of the House, where she basically was like, we need to introduce this stop arming terrorist bill. And my philosophy now has been, well, I've been a Gorse for a long time, so I don't pay taxes, right? But now I think we have a legitimate reason to not pay taxes. If America is openly funding terrorists, and we have congressmen of states trying to put in bills for our government to stop arming terrorists, I think it's about time we stop giving them money. Like, let's withdraw our support in taxes, and if they bring us into court, say, well, it's illegal to fund terrorists. You're fucking terrorists. Like, they're caught in a legal loophole here, and I plan to exploit it. I hope they bring me in one day. I hope I make enough money that they bring me in, because I refuse to give this government anything.
That's a good point. And, you know, we got tax day coming up in a couple days here. I think April 15th is the deadline to do your taxes. And I know a lot of people are going to have a tax burden. Some people get a tax refund, which is, you know, a whole other topic. But tax resisting.
Oh, yeah, I'm a tax resister for sure.
Is a strong tactic. In fact, maybe the strongest activism tactic that we have at our disposal at this point, because it's so hard and people are so splintered in trying to find a cohesive anti-war movement or anything like that. I'm not sure that we can really get much going on that front.
Here's a good question for you guys. Nick, I hate to interrupt, man. It was actually something I was thinking about the other day. You know, all the power that we have in the alternative media, right? We've definitely, without a doubt, grown tenfold in the last 5 years. We can push stories now. We control the narrative. We've done a good job at preventing, you know, war and trying to remain peaceful. But if they do, say, enact the draft, right, and our generation, the millennial generation, 1982, you know, 1995 or whatever it was, do you think many of us will really follow the government's commands to go to war? Like, in comparison to the 50s and 60s, World War II, Vietnam, when it was all patriotic and they didn't have the internet and they didn't have the anti-media, you know, they didn't have the version of us to tell them, look, this is pretty stupid, guys. We don't have to do this. So I mean, I don't want to say I look forward to the war, but I've been very optimistic in my stance of anarchy, in the sense of, if they do go to World War III, if they do enact the draft, the only people that are going to die are statists. They're people willing to die for their government, and they are of no value to me. And I hate to be so brash about it, but I'm trying to turn those of us who are willing to resist, you know, same thing Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali did. You know, he's resisted on moral, religious grounds, on principle. And I think that's what we, as the anti-media, as the activist generation, because that's what we are. I think we're the activist generation. We're the biggest force this country's seen since the 60s, since the anti-war movement of the 60s, and I mean, the war really hasn't even amped up yet. So we're only going to grow, and they're going to do nothing but weaken themselves. Wait till you see this article I'm about to put out tomorrow. Justin's been dealing with his Lakeview Police Department stuff, so it's hard to get articles out right now. But basically, China has said America weakened itself by spending hundreds of million dollars in the last 10 years on war, where China has invested in infrastructure, particularly what's called the New Silk Road, global trade to South Africa, you know, Eastern Africa, Europe. They've built all these boat lines and trains and all this distribution network, where we've just been buying military equipment. So it won't.
And our infrastructure has gone to shit.
It's going to shit. We can't sustain the war, man.
Right here in San Diego, ever since since New Year in San Diego, the city itself here has doled out $30,000 in lawsuits from people who have been injured or have damaged their cars by hitting potholes on our street. Like, the city of San Diego has doled out $30,000 so far this year because people keep injuring themselves or destroying their potholes. Like, our infrastructure is shit.
Who's going to build the roads, right? I mean, this is just, we're getting to that point where these age-old cliches, we need the government to build the roads, are really becoming redundant and self-explanatory. Like, you don't even have to explain to people anymore. They know the government shit. They know the media shit. Most of the polls that the media uses are all people over 45 years old. They don't use polls of millennials. No, millennials, when you poll millennials, how many of them watch television? It's like 10-15%. You know what I mean? So it won't be long now. I don't see it taking very long, and it's going to be an abrupt change from where we're at now to where we're headed, in my opinion. I mean, and I really don't think there's any avoiding the war until we purge ourselves of the parasite class. And I don't think we're going to do that forcefully. I think we have to do that by starving it out. It's one thing that I talk about a lot, especially at the Free Your Mind conference. I was talking to people about it. It's the concept of why try to fight a beast that you can starve to death. So I'm a firm proponent of just withdrawing our support from all the institutions of the government. Let's homeschool our kids. Let's get midwives. Let's quit paying taxes. Let's grow our own food. Fuck them.
I think you're right, and unfortunately, and we've been saying this for a while here, is that things are going to have to get a little bit worse before they can get better.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just pulled up the numbers here on the millennial generation, because I think you bring up a pretty important point. And, you know, the other thing to remember, too, is that, you know, the millennial generation is actually bigger. There's more millennials alive than there are baby boomers now. We outnumber them. We don't watch TV. We don't buy into their bullshit. We also don't vote that much. But, you know, that's another story. But the numbers are right here. Millennials are from people born from 1981 through 1997, which means the people from ages of 35 to 20. That is the age of the fighting. That's the fighting age. These are like everyone that's a millennial. If these motherfuckers start World War III, they're going to send all of us off to die. At least they think they are.
They want that. They want the millennials wiped because they're the unmitigated. That they were the first. We were the first consumers of the internet before they could fake news it away. So they want our entire generation gone so they can restart with these brainwashed fools that are in elementary school now.
Yeah, you're right. When we have a window, guys, and I think all of us have a sense of that. I think everyone within our community has a sense of this window that was given to us, right? I think we knew when we got into social network marketing, like, holy shit, they're giving us this much power. I think we knew when we pushed the Pizzagate story and when Ben Swan got kicked off the air and when they started fake news. I was telling Max Egan, actually, one of the things I talked to him about was that all throughout history, they had tabloids. There was always tabloids. There was always, you know, fucking Bill Clinton had sex with a pigeon and I shot a giant cricket and all these fucking wild things, you know, on the front page of that had truth mixed in. But they would never ever – tabloids were never called fake news. It wasn't until we started putting out real news that they said, oh, shit, we better call this something. We better call it fake news and make these new things.
The plan got disrupted, right?
Right.
We got disrupted and all of a sudden, oh shit, fake news destroyed this election.
Exactly.
And then the funny thing is they used fake news to realign Donald Trump. They said, okay, Donald Trump wasn't the scripted candidate, but we can work with Donald Trump. We just got to use fake news to get him in line so that the only way that he can prove himself and make his ego feel better is by attacking Russia or like physically bombing Syria, but indirectly, you know, attacking Russia. That was all the deep state playing Donald Trump's ego against him. We talked about that on the show. The way to get Donald Trump is through his ego. They knew that shit just as well as we do. And they got a lot more help than we do.
Don't forget that warfare has evolved to a point where it's unfathomable now, because a lot of people don't know that the United States deep state declared war on India and took its cash away by hacking them. So now they're having a mass starvation event over there, and it's silent. So you do not need to bomb anyone to get what you want anymore.
I was going to say that earlier, DV. You bring up an excellent point, brothers. That's how another way you can tell that these things are manufactured, right? I don't want to misquote the numbers, but I think it was like 70 people died in the Syrian gas attack, right? 2 weeks prior than that, and I think this is Abby Martin's work, was a Saudi Arabian Black Hawk helicopter shot up a boat with 88 Somalian immigrants, 88 African immigrants were just blown up by a jet. That wasn't a big deal, right? Water,
dude. Literally, like, what's the saying? Like yeah, dude. I mean, literally a boat just floating in the water, and a Saudi Arabian helicopter just killed all.
Gunned it down with a 50 caliber. Everybody was on it. It was just massacred. That's not a big deal. The thousands of people that die in countries that are sanctioned and embargoed by America, right? Like Gaza, you can't take a boat there full of food without being shot down by the Israeli army. So there's places that literally have starving kids, Yemen. You know, places like that where people are starving to death in the thousands. And we don't worry about that. That's not a humanitarian crisis. But a fucking chlorine canister goes off by an airfield, and we're in open arms. We got to waste $50 million to send a 4D chess move message that Donald Trump isn't a punk. Come on now. It's the American fucking government. We've been blowing up people for 60 years. I think the world knows we're not punks by now.
Yeah, and you know the other thing too about, you know, chemical weapons and shit. First of all, you know, as I mentioned, we're using chemical weapons on our own people. Tear gas has been banned for international warfare. If someone used a tear gas in a war zone, that would be considered a war crime. But we have no problem using it against our own people in Standing Rock. We got no problem using it against our own people in Ferguson. We got no problem using it against our people in Anaheim. We got no problem using it against our people in Baltimore, in New York, in all over the damn country, where people were, it seems a coincidental, people standing up for their damn rights, people standing up for themselves, get tear gas used on them. That's a chemical weapon. If that was an international war zone, that would be a war crime. Secondly, going back to Saudi Arabia and what they're doing in Yemen, and you know, of course, the U.S. is backing that operation and may become directly involved, according to some Trump administration officials. Right. You're supplying Saudi Arabia with white phosphorus. I mean, if you want to talk about chemical weapons, this is one of the most cruel forms of weaponry you can imagine. If a piece of white phosphorus lands on you, it's going to burn all the way through the bone. Like, I mean, this is a very, very cruel weapon. And we have been supplying Saudi Arabia with white phosphorus, and they're dropping it on Yemen. Where is the outrage? Why aren't we bombing Saudi Arabia?
Because the media controls the perception. I can't remember what... I mean, it goes all the way back to what's his freaking name? Noam Chomsky's, man. Manufacturing consent. So it's all about manufacturing consent. And that's what we got to chip away from. Or just... I don't know. Somehow they've got to realize, people have got to wake up, that the media is using them as tools, just by manipulating their mind to seek public approval for things that shouldn't be approved. Like, moral relativism is a big problem in America. Like, it's okay when we do it, but it's not okay when they do it. I was thinking about writing an article that compares Bashar Assad to Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin. Because beside them two, if you actually look at what fucking Bashar Assad has done, it's very minuscule of a quote-unquote war crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is complicated over there. Now, don't get me wrong. I do not applaud the way that Assad has responded to this uprising. But at the same time, we have to consider the fact that the United States has been behind this uprising. It's one of those, like, color revolutions that were involved with, like, the Arab Spring. It was, in many ways, engineered by the deep state and the CIA. So on one hand, we can't defend Assad. On the other hand, we can't defend our involvement in trying to overthrow Assad either. The one principle here that people are not upholding, not even here in the United States, is self-determination. I mean, this is the one principle that should be universal throughout the world. People in places have different cultures and different ways of doing things around the world, different countries. Just between the U.S. and Mexico, the whole entire way of living is completely different. Self-determination is the key. People should be allowed to determine the way that they're going to live. We should not be in North Korea. We should not be in Iraq, Syria, or Ukraine, or anywhere else around the world telling other people, hey, guys, here's how you should run your government. Because our own government can't get it right. The Congress has, what, a 9% approval rating? Donald Trump is the least popular president in modern history. I mean, how can we have the moral high ground here and say, hey, guys, we're going to tell you how to live in Syria when we can't even tell our own selves how to live at this point? It blows my mind. Like, we need to just shut the hell up, bring the troops home, close down our bases, stop trying to tell other people how to live, build infrastructure here and solar paneling and shit so we don't got to start wars for oil and shit. And then give it some years, and then maybe we can look at the situation again and say, okay, we've gotten our shit in order. Now let's go try to help other countries where their governments are bad. But you know what? Right now,
I'm voting Nick Barnaby for president in 2020.
I hate to say it, man, but while the U.S. government may not be the most brutal on its own people or the most, you know, just outright, you know, unjust, the U.S. government is the biggest government, the most forceful government, and the biggest military in the world. So in many ways, the U.S. government is the worst government in the entire world, outwardly speaking. Inwardly speaking, I mean, yeah, people in the U.S. do have a fairly decent standard of living. We have a fairly decent amount of freedom, which both of those things are quickly eroding away. But right now, you know, we can still say, look, we are more free here in the U.S. than they are in Russia, for instance. But outwardly speaking, I mean, we are the most violent government in the world. And so
we're the most violent government in the history of the world.
We can't really go around telling North Korea, we can't go around telling the world, hey, North Korea is violent because they might invent or might develop a technology that they might use against people, when the United States has already developed that technology and has already and is already using it against other people. And hey, so the hypocrisy here is just huge.
You know, I was going to just say, you guys bring up a good point with it being the worst, most violent government and empire the world's ever seen. Just fathom this for a second. The Revolutionary War, what was that really about? Was it about a tea tax or anything like that? No, it wasn't about any of that crap. It was because the original colonists, those pieces of crap, wanted to keep going west and kill all the Indians. And King George said no. So we fought them to do that, and then we wiped them all out. So yeah, man, we're the worst, most violent, most heinous, despicable government of all time by far.
Guatemala in the 1960s is one of the stories that always stands out to me, when the president wanted to socialize the fruit market and give all his citizens fruit trees to be prosperous. So we sent Marines down there and wiped them all out. It's just fucking stupid. Bitter fruit. If anybody's listening and doesn't know about it, just research bitter fruit. It'll blow your mind. Some of the things that they did in Iraq and Fallujah, like, they literally went door to door and just disarmed the entire population. Like, it didn't matter if you were involved in the war or not. You were getting your home searched. You were getting all your... It was basically a complete totalitarian takeover. It was like a foreign coup, you know, and they just replaced them with new name people that are allegiant to us. But Libya is the same thing. And then basically just destabilizing it and leaving it open for the rebels. I think
they went in there and they searched everyone's house for freedom to make sure that they had freedom. And if they had too much freedom, they took it away.
Nothing's freer than not being able to defend yourself. I mean, it's proven.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing we did in Iraq, which is another problem that we're likely to cause in Syria if we go further into knocking out that government there, which, you know, Trump says that he's not going to go into Syria, but all indications are that there's a good chance that they will. They've positioned troops all around the area. What we did in Iraq is we knock out the government. And we create a vacuum where we like you said, Danny, we put in a puppet government, but they, you know, puppet governments are inefficient. They're not popular. No one listens to them. The government was opened our operations in Iraq opened up a huge vacuum, and it was filled by two players, ISIS and their handlers, which include Saudi Arabia and them up in the northern end of Iraq. And it was also filled by Iran, who we say is a enemy of ours. Well, we did them a huge favor, and now Iran is the most influential player in Iraq. And now in Syria as well. Look what we've done. Like, everything we're doing over there backfires, and at some point we may have to ask the question, are they making it backfire on purpose to keep selling arms, to keep making wars?
To take away more freedom, too. Don't forget, Patriot Act has only been built on.
Yeah, I'll tell it Jake chime in on this before we start talking to Danny about the Free Your Mind conference. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, everything that's happened in the last 15 years is a direct response from Patriot Act. And you look at what, you know, you look at when there's a crime committed, you look at motive and means. And in the case of the U.S. government, it's very clear who had the biggest motive and who had the means. And look at everything that has resulted since then. It's created a clear path to the Wesley Clark sequence that Danny alluded to, and the Project for a New American Century, which was lined up before 9/11. It's very, very clear at this point what they did and what they're still doing. And at this point, like you said, one of their greatest enemies is the internet. And that's why I think that we're probably going to see a massive clampdown on the internet, especially if there's another terrorist attack. They'll use that as an excuse to crack down on cyber terrorism and online information. And they know, you know, like you were talking about the window that's open right now. You know, we've made an impact. We made an impact with what we've gotten out there. But this is insidious what they're doing. I mean, this is beyond just war acts. And the new WikiLeaks releases are showing how they can reverse engineer these cyber attacks and make it look like a different country attacked someone else. I mean, it's far more insidious than we could have ever imagined, and it's I don't know what the solution is, but man, it's sickening.
You know what's awesome, Jake? Let me say one thing on that real quick, guys. Is we're literally dealing with a lot, right? We're all in the cyber activist, you know, alternative media community. We have bots, we have shadow bans, we have algorithms we're contending with, we have mainstream media contention, you know, the flack machine, I think it was called, from Chomsky. We have all these things that are against us. We have the new Facebook thing where you can report this as fake news, and it doesn't have to be fake news. You just get a fucking bot account of 20,000 people to vote it down. You'll never be seen, right? But we're still growing. They can't stop us. The dinosaur media is dying. People want to know the truth, and they'll find it. And the example I've given recently was when Reddit took down the Pizzagate post, and everybody just went to a new website. It took a day. It took one day, and everybody found Vote, and Vote stock market fucking skyrocketed. So it's like I was talking to Derek about Ben Swan. Right, and this is what's going on in the media, is it's in the market's interest to let Ben Swan do his reality check. The market wants that. It makes their show much more popular. But for some reason, the negative effects of that show is worth more than the positive benefits of that show. And this is a scary reality, because what is the higher-ups doing to the CBS mid-level people to make them so afraid? You know, what if you want to go with the Donald Trump's being blackmailed or trick story, you know what I mean? What do these people have that's so powerful that Donald Trump's just going along with their story now? You know what I mean? There's a lot of cases like that.
Yeah. Black. If you go on Godlike Productions, either he was blackmailed, cloned, or he's playing six-dimensional chess. One of the three.
Yeah, that sounds like Godlike Veterans Today.
Well, yeah. They just found the screws on Donald Trump, and they started turning him. And obviously, there was an article today over on Ron Paul's website. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. I'm not sure if we're going to have much time to go over the Free Your Mind conference here. Like I said, Danny, you can talk about anything, man. And so,
you know, what's great about the Free Your Mind conference is a lot of us are getting together now to work on solutions, especially like Derek, John Vibes, Vinny. Our little community is really actively getting out there and pushing new things, freedom cells and agorism, and really promoting nonviolent means of withdrawing authority and power from the corrupt government and replacing them. And basically replacing the government. We can replace the government institutions in the same way that Redbox replaced Blockbuster. That's the idea. Just create alternatives. You know, we all have that same idea. Create an alternative to the media system. And it's starting to work. And the same thing that we did with the media system, other people can do with the education system or the tax system or, you know, or the financial system, you know, Bitcoin, those kind of things. It's about decentralization. And that's what I wanted to talk about. But there's just so much going on in the world that's important, you know?
So much going on, man. So Free Your Mind Conference, look, I'm going to make it a point that me, Jake, DB, and Danny, we're all going to go out there next year. So anyone listening tonight, make sure you go to the Free Your Mind Conference 2018 in Philadelphia next year. One of our close associates helped set it up, and it's a great thing. Me and DB went there a couple years ago, and we had the times of our lives. Before I forget, Jake, you brought up an interesting aspect, and this has been overlooked because of all the other news going on, but WikiLeaks has been dumping some CIA files over the past couple weeks. And one thing that we've found out that is pretty big is that the deep state has the ability to misattribute cyber attacks against whoever they want. So they can make a cyber attack and say, oh, Russia did it, or they can say, oh, well, Iran did it. Or in the case that I want to bring up is North Korea, going back to the Sony attack and the interview movie. You guys remember all that stuff. You remember that there was a hack of Sony, and then it was attributed against North Korea, who basically it's almost laughable because North Korea is so far behind on technology that they have such a small economy that anyone thinking that, oh, North Korea has a team of hackers that are so awesome, they were able to hack into Sony and do all this stuff. First of all, it's unbelievable. Second of all, we had a source. I can't reveal too much information, but we had a source with information within the DOD that told us that the hack was not done by North Korea. But that didn't matter because the media ran with that story and everyone said, oh, well, North Korea hacked Sony and that we have to retaliate. So it was big for a couple of reasons. First of all, it was the Obama administration retaliating against another country in defense of a company, which is Sony, which isn't even an American company, which is actually a Japanese company. So, I mean, it was a really interesting thing. But the thing was is that hack was blamed on North Korea. It wasn't actually North Korea, according to our sources, and according to a lot of, like, cyber experts that are just saying, no, North Korea couldn't have done this.
It was probably a false flag.
It was basically a false flag, and the U.S. responded against North Korea. And I don't know if you guys remember, but it was only a couple days later North Korea's internet got knocked out. The little internet that they have got knocked out, and their central bank got hacked into. And so, you know, that was in retaliation of this fake hack that they blamed on – not fake hack, but a hack that they blamed on North Korea that wasn't actually North Korea. That was more likely a disgruntled Sony employee. And so this kind of stuff is already going on. We know that they're using false flag cyber attacks to pin the blame on countries who we don't get along with, like North Korea and probably Iran, and of course, obviously Russia with the whole, oh, Russia hacked the election talking point. You know, and so these are the games that we're having to deal with. And then this gas attack in Syria, which makes absolutely zero sense from Assad's point of view. I mean, why would a guy who's has gained the upper hand in the civil war, why would he go and use a chemical weapon knowing damn well what would be the repercussions of it? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, from all logical points of view, it doesn't make any sense at all that Assad carried out that attack. I mean, maybe he's the dumbest, most idiotic person that's in charge of a country in the world right now, and he actually did that. Maybe. That may be the case. Maybe Assad is way dumber than I think he is. But from a logical perspective, the only group that would, you know, benefit from that are like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra Front, and those kind of people. So, you know, thank you for joining us tonight, Danny. We're going to have you back on soon. Thank you all for tuning in to the Anti-Media Radio 5 days a week, same place, same time.
Have a good night, everyone. Peace.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
This is JJ Quick.